Blog Talk Radio.
Here we are. The Federal Reserve raises the interest rate on emergency borrowing while first-time jobless claims go up. What's wrong with this picture? The Food and Drug Administration says it's okay to eat salmon from Chile that carries a virus that causes anemia in fish. On the other hand, they're the same folks who approved fenfen, a diet drug that caused heart attacks, so I'm not real sure how eager you might want to be to eat that fish. There are some sporting events going on in Vancouver, British Columbia. Okay, everyone, pretend this is important. A study's just been released that after great analysis has determined that young people are less religious than older people. See? That's it. I'm just young. Sales at Walmart are down. As a result, factories in China that make cheap plastic junk that no one really needs are expected to close. And did we mention last week that in a new poll, even a majority of Republicans think Sarah Palin is unqualified to be president? No, we probably didn't. Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea, welcome to Speaking of Everything with Jeff Bushman. That would be me. All that, news of the weird, a surprise guest to talk in the wake of Valentine's Day on the subject of love relationships. If you have one, or want to improve one, stick around. And if there's time, we'll talk about drunk driving and the insanity behind our laws on that subject. First, we have told you in weeks past, unlike that poll about Sarah Palin, we've told you in weeks past about our book, The Mobile Millionaire. And I'll mention it again now. First, let me mention the site. It's mobilemillionaire.blogspot.com, where you can see an excerpt from the book, a rather long excerpt, and decide if the book is for you. But I wanted to share with you that perhaps a sign of the recession ending, our mobile home business, there are really, really many fewer vacancies. As a matter of fact, we're down to one. It looks like that's going to be filled. But the point of it is this might be a very good time to look at the book and think about getting into that business. I will have nothing to do with your business unless you ever need help and want to call me. But the fact is that in terms of the book, this might be a good time to think about getting it and making a small investment in mobile homes to improve your economic situation, because the economy seems to be leaning in that direction. So if you want to think about it, it's up to you. But look at mobilemillionaire.blogspot.com at the site, which will tell you about the book and give you the opportunity to obtain it if you want to. Meantime, let's talk about those stories. The Federal Reserve, as I mentioned, had raised the interest rates on emergency borrowing, and first-time jobless claims have gone up. Normally, you would not want to see those two things at the same time. Well, you never want to see jobless claims go up, of course, but interest rates affect employment to a large degree over time. So when unemployment is high, you want to keep interest rates low. Well, the one rate that the Federal Reserve Board increased was the emergency borrowing interest rates that banks pay if they ever have to borrow money from the Federal Reserve. The fact is very few banks ever do that anymore. And so the rate is more symbolic than real. It's a way of the Federal Reserve telling both business people in the United States and overseas that things in our economy are improving enough to justify that. So it's really meaningless for almost everybody. The only reason for concern is that there would be concern that they might conceivably raise interest rates in other areas. That is to say, interest rates on borrowing for business and things like that. The bottom line reality is that's not going to happen so long as there is no inflation in the system on an ongoing basis, and that's not the case, largely because of the unemployment rate, since if consumers aren't spending money, the unemployment rate will continue to stay, unfortunately, high. And that's because so much of the economy is dependent on consumer spending. This virus is found in farmed fish that is coming out of Chile. The ocean fish, you have nothing to worry about, apparently, except for a little mercury, perhaps. But in terms of the, and of course, the problem with eating fish. But this farmed fish from Chile is much worse in terms of risk, because it contains a virus that can cause some pretty serious anemia in fish. Now, the FDA says it won't be passed along to humans who eat it. They say, of course, the same thing about mad cow disease if you eat beef that has mad cow. But there is some indication that a similar disease is found in humans who have eaten beef so tainted. And it's really too early to determine for sure that this fish is safe. But the FDA has a tendency, this is now opinion, of course, the FDA has a tendency to be a, I guess there's no better way of saying it, a prostitute for meat and fish producers. They just want Americans to eat plenty of meat and fish and always feel safe doing it. I will acknowledge that I have a bias being a vegetarian, but even without that, what the FDA says about food is you have to take with a grain of salt. And, of course, that's not good for you if you have high blood pressure, but that's a whole other matter. Sales at Walmart are down. That was said earlier on, and although a joke was made about it, which isn't probably too funny if you work at Walmart, but the Walmart came out saying that actually its last quarter profits were up, but current sales in this quarter are down, and they were giving Wall Street a warning about that. And the situation is such that it's hard to determine what that means. If you think about it, during most of the recession, sales at Walmart have been vigorous and brisk. And if you think about why, it's obvious. It's the downward impact on people with less money or more fear who want to spend less for the same goods or similar goods than they would get at more major stores. So the impact is that Walmart has generally done well. Now, if people are not buying at Walmart, does it mean, and I don't know the answer to this, I just know that it's an interesting question, does it mean that people are spending less at Walmart because they're spending more at, okay, perhaps not Saks Fifth Avenue, but say a Target or other stores that are somewhat upscale from Walmart? Not like Target is real upscale, but although in some areas, they give it additional panache by referring to Target as Target. But leaving that aside, Target is generally, and Kmart are generally considered to be slightly more expensive, sometimes slightly better goods, and there are, of course, other stores that are slightly up from that. The essence of the question is, are people spending money at higher-priced stores because they now can or feel that they can or they're more comfortable or more secure in their jobs? Or are they so desperate, are enough people so desperate that they're not even spending money at Walmart? It's a question to which we obviously don't know the answer. I have a guess, but I don't know. And the fact that Walmart sales are down will play out after a while and will provide more information to us. And speaking of business and businesses, if you're in business and you have a website and you're not blogging, you're missing a really good opportunity to engage your customers and potential customers and to improve traffic to your website. If you want details on that and would like to see about a blogging service done by a professional writer who's too modest to tell you who he is during this commercial break, please go to jeffonblogging.blogspot.com, and you can see at that site a discussion about the advantage of blogging from the standpoint of what I was talking about before, engaging your customers, and also a legitimate way of what is sometimes called search engine optimization, which is to say a way of getting your website higher up in the list when someone does a relevant search. So again, that's jeffonblogging.blogspot.com. Going to talk to you briefly about News of the Weird. We get our News of the Weird from the website of the same name, newsoftheweird.com. We generally give you some of the tamer stuff, which I mentioned because our last story in News of the Weird is not entirely tame. But the newsoftheweird.com overall has some really funny things, and I commend you to to them, or commend them to you, I guess is the appropriate way to say it. You can go to their website and see a lot of funny stuff. The same thing true The same thing is true, by the way, of TheOnion.com, which is a satirical news site, which is outrageously funny sometimes, and otherwise just very funny. But here are some stories for you. By the way, before I go into those stories, I wanted to give out the phone number for you to call in either now or when we talk about love relationships. You may want to know what we think about what the guest, the surprise guest and I, think of your love relationship issues, or you may want to comment on something we say. But if you'd like to call in now about politics and economics, by all means, feel free to do that. The number to call is 347-994-3796. Just to make myself completely annoying, I'll repeat the number. It's 347-994-3796. Let me talk about the stories, and then we'll talk about our calendar of guests coming up after tonight. The Lower Merion School District in Pennsylvania provides laptop computers to every one of their 1,800 high school students. The officials say that this ensures that all the students have 24/7 access to school-based resources. But at least one of the other reasons they apparently do this is to allow school officials after school to access the students' home lives. This is less funny than it is peculiar, but I was astounded by the story. Each one of the student laptops contain an embedded webcam that can be remotely activated by the school personnel. Anything happening in the room that the laptop is in, where the school-provided laptop is present, can be watched by school officials whenever they want to activate the webcam. So this isn't checking what the students are accessing on the web through the laptop. This is watching what goes on in the family residences of the kids who go to these schools. And, you know, they've never said why, but this is something that they're doing. Now, it all came to light when a student was pulled in to see the assistant principal of the school. Her name is Linda Matsko. And the student was reprimanded for improper behavior at home. And to verify what she was saying, she apparently showed the student a picture that was taken by the webcam in the boy's home. And a lawsuit has been filed by his parents on his behalf in federal court. If this is all true, and I expect it is, obviously it's more than a touch outrageous. And I often think about how wonderful it would have been if we'd had computers when I was going to high school, which was back in the dark ages when we just had slate. But if this is what it takes to have a computer when you're in school, that's insane. And whoever thought of that is or certainly should be out of a job. That's invasive, crazy, anything you want to say. But that's just, I guess the simpler way of saying it is it's nuts. Moving to a, I guess, slightly happier story, we're, of course, moving on to sex. So those of you who have children in the room next to your computer who are listening to this, you may want to shoo them out. One, two, three. Okay, here we go. An increasing number of elderly men are going to Swiss brothels, carrying with them a well-known anti-impotence treatment of the well-known drugs that we've all been hearing about. This is because of the side effects of the drug that can happen in some users. The brothel is training... or I should say some of the brothels, are training their staff in the use of defibrillators in the event that the pill-popping customers become, I guess, unconscious from a heart attack. Because sometimes if you take these drugs, apparently you can get heart attacks. That's one of the warnings that they say while everybody's smiling through the commercial. One of the sex club owners said, having customers die on us is not exactly good publicity. That's probably true. Especially after popping a pill. It probably wouldn't be great publicity for the makers of Viagra and the other drugs either, but anyway, the brothels are training their staff to use defibrillators in case anybody pops an artery. And finally, in this section, this is excuse me, Australia. We were just talking about Switzerland, but Australia is not to be left out of the subject of sex and efforts to improve the situation in their own sex industry. In an effort to promote safe sex, the Australian government will be supplying condoms to prostitutes and their customers. Not just the generic plain old condoms either. The government of Australia is requesting price quotes from the manufacturers of condoms of all colors, flavors, and textures. Apparently, they really want to make sure that people visit down under. That's all I can say. It's a lovely, lovely thing. Anyway, I will tell you now. I will tell you now who the surprise guest is, and then before she joins us, I wanted to talk to you. excuse me, about some impressions I have about drunk driving. These are obviously my opinions, and they're based on an experience I had recently. But our guest tonight is going to be the very lovely Alicia Bushman, or as we used to call her in the mid and late 60s, Alicia Bird. My lovely bride is going to join us, and we are going to talk about relationships, love relationships generally, and you're welcome to join us. And by that, I mean in terms of conversation, not in our relationship. But you're welcome to join us by phone at 347-994-3796. Now, I should add, that was probably presumptuous on my part. If you can join us in some other way at that phone number, without a phone, more power to you. In any event, let me talk briefly about drunk driving. When someone commits a crime, typically murder is what we hear about. When someone commits a crime, and they are unquestionably criminally insane. That has a specific legal definition, which I couldn't possibly remember. The old one used to be that you didn't know the difference between right and wrong. That, I believe, is part of the current definition, but the most recent definition I remember reading, which is a long time ago, said, or even if aware of the difference between right and wrong, is unable to control him or herself, or to control the impulse to commit the act. Well, when someone is unquestionably, certifiably criminally insane, we generally don't punish them for the act they've committed, which would otherwise be considered criminal, because they had no control over themselves. They had no ability to determine the rightness of their act or couldn't control the impulse to commit that known wrong act. But when it comes to drunk driving, we have a different standard. I'm not suggesting that everybody who drives drunk is of the same level of insanity, although we can all agree it would be crazy to do that. But what we do have is a situation where people who drink, one of the things that drunkenness does to you, what alcohol does to you, everybody, is to reduce your capacity to make judgments, to make sound judgments. So if we know that having once consumed the drug, you are not logically able to make a judgment about whether to get behind the wheel or not. We can all say it's horrible that you do that, and so on and so forth, and we'd like to prevent it from happening. But why do we nonetheless punish the person who's unable to exercise the judgment because they are consuming the drug of alcohol? Now, there's an obvious argument to that, which is, you certainly have the capacity to not drink before you start, especially if you know you're going to drive. Yeah, true enough, but most people who drink, and I'm not a drinker, most people who drink believe they can at least have one and it'll be okay if they wait a while before they drive. I'm not sure that's true, but let's assume it is. Sometimes when they have one drink, again with a somewhat slightly diminished judgment, they decide they can have another, and this leads to a cycle where they are drinking and not able to exercise the judgment that would be necessary to not get into an automobile as a driver. Since that's the case, and since we all know that drunk driving is a plague and is death on wheels, quite literally coming at us, the statistic I read said that if you're on a heavily trafficked road, like a freeway or something, that one of the next 50 drivers coming towards you is drunk, not slightly inebriated, not having had a drink or so, but drunk. Okay, so there's danger out there. That's 2% of all the drivers. 1 out of 50 is 2%. So what can we do to prevent it? Well, one of the things I think we should do is that if someone is arrested for drunk driving, before they can get out of jail, they have to go ahead. I think this requires legislation, obviously, and this is what I'm suggesting to you all, respectively. And if you agree, let me urge you to contact your state legislators to urge them to do this, is that if someone is arrested, charged with drunk driving, before they can get out of jail, they have to have someone else, a member of their household, a friend, or whoever, take the car in to someplace where an interlock device can be put on the car, meaning that the car can't start unless, depending on the device that's preferable, you blow into a breathalyzer, the driver blows into a breathalyzer, or when they turn on the car, a series of random numbers comes up that then has to be punched into the machine before the car can start. Something that will be very difficult to do if someone is inebriated, and easy to do if you're not. And then they can get out, make it a condition of bail, and if they can't afford it, the government should pay for it, and in terms of the fine or the bail, be required to pay it back over a period of time, a violation of which is contempt of court, and they can be put into jail for not paying it back. And that further, this would have to be done with all the vehicles in the household. This is an oversimplification. I want to be quick because we want to, in a moment, bring in our lovely guest. But this is something that really needs to be done. I had the experience over the weekend of speaking to a gentleman whose wife is having problems with alcohol and was temporarily jailed when we were talking. And you had to feel terrible for the man and for her and the family. Granted, she's the one who was drunk driving, but we have to stop thinking of these people as criminals. They are sick in a variety of ways, one of which is they're addicted to a drug, and they can't get away from it. So, okay, fine. I don't care if you drink yourself silly. I just don't want you to get into a car when you're doing it. And so if you've been charged or convicted one or more times, no car in your household can be present without one of those interlock devices. That's the way the law should be. Tell me if you want to why that doesn't make any sense at 347-994-3796. If not, now feel free to call in another episode of our show. We are, in case you're listening to this in archive edition, we are on every Thursday night from 6:30 to 7:30 Pacific, 9:30 to 10 o'clock Mountain. I'm sorry, Eastern Time, 7:30 to 8:30 here in the Mountain Time Zone. Next week, we will have a return of our friend Larry Hancock, the author of the book on the John F. Kennedy assassination. And then the following week, we'll have a professor joining us talking about the seemingly dull subject of groundwater treatment. He's come up with something that can save millions of lives in Africa and South America, and that I think will both of those shows are going to be very interesting, and we have other guests that we're trying to schedule, but those two are, as they say, on the calendar. So we hope you continue to join us, and as I said, if you're listening in archive edition, if you're listening live, by the way, I should add that all of our prior shows are available on the same website you went to listen to us live. And you can click on one of those or more and join us or listen to us. Obviously, you can't call in when it's we're listening to archive, but the rest of the time you can. And let's see if I can do this because I see we have Alicia joining us, and I'm trying to get this to work so I can pick her up. Hold on here. I love this high tech. There she is. Are you there?
I'm here. Hi.
Hi, Angel. We'll try not to have too many terms of endearment so we don't make people, you know, run for the Dramamine.
Okay.
But Alicia and I have been married now for 23 and a half years. And did you know we passed the halfway mark this year already?
I really hadn't stopped to think about it. Yeah, the right way.
I just did now. Yeah.
Okay. That's right, yeah. And okay. It seems like a really short period of time, and it also seems like we've been together for all eternity.
Yeah. And There's a joke here. Like, it seems to her like we've been together for all eternity after she listens to me talk about economics. But
no. No, that's not what I meant.
Oh, I know. But we really have, I have that same feeling that it feels like we've always been together and should have been. And the 23 and a half years have gone by very, very quickly in terms of the relationship. Rather than just talking about our marriage and our relationship, although it is an example, what we wanted to talk about tonight, we just had Valentine's Day over this last weekend. And some of you were very happy with it. Some of you were miserable. And we wanted to talk for a minute about what makes a good relationship, what people need to do, should do, could do in order to improve a good relationship, to improve a relationship, rather, or to when they are thinking about a relationship, marriage, whatever, what they need to look out for in terms of their own behavior and that of their would-be mate. So go ahead and tell us what you think is necessary for a good relationship, sweetie.
I think that before you can consider having a good relationship with another person, you have to have a deep relationship with yourself. And please don't make a joke about this, okay?
Not me.
Okay. And what I mean by that is that...
With that straight line, I'm taking a completely hands-off approach. Go ahead.
You have to be capable of enjoying your own life. You have to be interested in something. You have to be able to spend time alone with yourself and to find you fulfilling. Because if you're not interested in life, if you don't have knowledge of who you are, and if you're looking for somebody to fill up all your empty places, so within yourself psychologically and emotionally, then that's really not a fair situation to put another person in, and it's not fair to yourself either, and it's definitely not going to create a relationship that can be viable.
Yeah, on that score, let me add, you know, I not to show how clever I am or anything, because I'm, you know, not sometimes yes, sometimes no, I guess. But I once said to somebody who was complaining that she was bored when, you know, we weren't spending time together, and, you know, I came up with the cliche that if you bore yourself, what was I saying? Oh, yeah, if you don't enjoy spending time by yourself, the odds are pretty good you bore other people, too. Which is part of what you're saying. You have to be able to not so much find yourself interesting, but find things that are interesting when you're by yourself, so that not just a TV show or a football game or something, but, you know, things in which you actually have an interest. They don't have to necessarily be what I'm interested in or what you're interested in, but something that interests you, and so it's making yourself a whole person. If you're not a whole person going into a relationship, and this is what you were saying as well, you're not going to really be good in a relationship or be good for someone or for yourself in that relationship, right?
Yes, right. And I also think that if you know yourself deeply, you can come to a decision about whether you're a person who would in fact do well in the long-term relationship. Mm-hmm. And many people in our society, really, that's not right for them. They are better off in their lives having more casual connections and having lots of friendships and having their families, but not trying to have a marriage or a relationship that lasts many, many years, because they really do not have the kind of emotional makeup that makes that possible for them to do. So basically, you know, everybody believes that they're supposed to, although many more people, I guess, are questioning it now, but the trend is to believe in our society that one gets married and has a child or two or a dog or both and has a shared existence, and that's the way one lives life. And you have the big wedding, and you have barbecues on the 4th of July, and go to baseball games in the summer. And nobody stops and thinks, well, really, am I going to be able to completely live with another person and really be okay with it and not end up resenting them? Mm-hmm. Do I have the capacity to share myself like that with someone, or do I even really deep down inside want to?
Right.
And those are questions that we need to find out about ourselves as we go through life. And most likely you're not going to know that at the age of 20. I mean,
right.
It would be rare because you just haven't had the emotional experiences in your life or just experiences out in the world that
mm-hmm.
allow you to really know who you are.
Yeah.
So
I wanted to add something here, too, in fairness, just so we don't come off like we think we're experts or that you know, we have, you know, we've never had a bad relationship before. We've always had a good one with each other. But before we met, each of us had had a prior marriage, and
mm-hmm.
they were, to put it delicately, lousy. Is that a fair
yeah.
statement? Okay. And so, and the point you were just making segued into that, which is that we got married at an age that many people talk about being too young. For most people, it is. And we, in each of our cases, got married when we were very young. And those didn't work out, not exclusively because we were young, but in part because I was talking before about the drunk driving and judgment. Well, whether it's drunkenness with lust or the idea of being married and all of that kind of thing, at a young age, most of the time, we don't have the necessary judgment to choose who's going to be our life mate, even if for a short period. Lots of people think now, well, if it doesn't work out, I can get a divorce, and all, and that can be some really painful stuff, especially if there are children involved. You know, one of the jokes somebody made is that this was not me. Is that most people wouldn't trust this applied when there were more people reading newspapers, of course. Most people wouldn't trust most 18 and 19 year olds to go down to the corner to get them a newspaper. But we all have a tendency to trust an 18-year-old who happens to be ourselves, or 19 years old, to make a significant decision about whether and whom we should marry. And
yeah.
That's a really momentous occurrence for most of us. And let me just throw in one more thing, and then I'll let you take off a little more, is that I had a conversation with two different conversations with two people, the same couple, recently, where they were asking, you know, or talking about their relationships, and one of the things I told them, and I know you would agree, is that in order to have a really successful relationship, one of the major components is that the other person's happiness has to be more important to you, legitimately, than your own.
Yeah, because that's what love is. It really
right.
has to be a deep love in order to work. And
so that's not to say you need to be a doormat, okay, and let someone walk all over you. That's not love. That's a case of allowing yourself to be abused. But we're talking about where there is a relationship of equals or near equals, what you were just saying, and that is that's what true love really is. Go ahead with what you were saying. I didn't mean to cut you off.
I don't think it's ever near equals. I think it's always completely equal
mm-hmm.
in the sense that you regard the other person as being as important as you are, or in a way, if that person really has your heart and you truly love that person, and basically when you really, really are in love and deeply in love with someone, it's something that grows over time. It's not something that you become disenchanted with because they drop their socks on the floor.
Thank God for that, is all I can say.
It's the kind of thing that when you truly, truly love somebody, their life has an importance to you which is beyond anything that you could completely ever express, that you see the beauty in that person, flaws and all. You feel their pain, you feel their joys. You are more protective of them in life than you are of yourself. Something you change. Love and a deep relationship transforms you. It stretches you in the sense that before that happens to you, the most important person in your life is you. And after that, after you really come to love deeply, and deep love does not happen in an instant.
Right.
Deep, of the possibility of deep love happens in an instant, but deep love is something that grows and evolves over time.
Right.
But when you have that with another person, no matter what happens to them, no matter if they're cranky, no matter if you see them when they have intestinal flu, nothing really changes that core feeling of your life, who you are, is just so dear, so precious. And that when you truly feel that way for somebody, that is a relationship, whether you are legally married or not. We are, but you know, I don't think that really, if we weren't, our relationship would be any different. The feelings would be the same. It's just a way of kind of organizing our lives that we are legally married. But and certainly for many gay people, that's not possible, and you know, that kind of love happens in the gay community as well.
Sure.
So that, and there are times, I will tell you that there are times when no matter how much you love somebody, somebody will pull something out of left field and you go, oh my God, you know, and you
I'm
can
sorry.
Be
very, you can be
very irritated with that person. You can be angry, but it's something that quickly passes away. And that feeling at bottom of deep love never changes. That never goes away.
That's right. And let me also say, you know, that that's, you know, the ideal and is achievable, that is having a deep love relationship. And because of Valentine's Day, we're talking about love, and also because it was a good excuse to talk about love and have Alicia on the show. But also, you know, there are relationships which are not that golden. Let me put that another way. There are relationships which are not that much of the heart, if you will, that are situations where you like each other, you love each other on some level, perhaps, but not as deeply as what we're talking about. But you still need to think about what makes a relationship, what would make a relationship better, just on a practical level. And what we're saying still applies. Make the other person's happiness more important than your own and see what you can do for someone. One of the big things that happens in a lot of relationships I see is a lot of anger. And it has to do with hurt, and it has to do with ego. You see people yelling at each other. Why would you want to, I forget, I don't get this. Why would anyone want to live with someone where they're yelling at each other a large part of the time? I don't get that.
I think because people are afraid to face life alone, and they don't realize that when you're living with somebody that you don't get along with and that is making you miserable, you're actually in a way more alone than you would be if you were in that kind of relationship. At least, you know, there's a feeling, and having been in a bad marriage, I know that there's a feeling that no matter how bad it can be, you know, at least in certain moments, there are some good things. And,
sure.
You know, there is also a feeling that there's another person standing next to you that you can kind of deal with things together. And if you're feeling very vulnerable in your life and you're not feeling like you're up to really facing life on your own, that is a time, you know, that is a warning signal for somebody who's probably going to jump into a relationship that really should not happen.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the reasons why it's very important to learn to navigate life in such a way that you have the strength and the ability to live your life and find it in some way rewarding. Because if you can't do that, not only do you not really have anything to share and to give, But you're likely to pick somebody who is not going to be right for you or you for them.
Right.
And that can just lead to problems that will affect you for the rest of your life. Even if there aren't children. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And picking up the thread of what I was saying before, you know, the idea about making someone else's happiness more important, I don't want to keep going on it, but talking about doing something for somebody. If you're in a relationship that's not great, one of the best ways to improve it is even, you know, and if it involves a lot of ego and anger and all the rest of it is, stop being angry. You don't necessarily have to apologize, although if you think, if your mate thinks you've done something wrong, it's okay to apologize even if you don't think you're wrong. Because what harm has it done you except damaged your silly pride? But beyond that, just do something for the other person, especially that's unexpected. And when I mentioned this to one of the members of that couple that I was referring to earlier, the response I initially got was, with no great surprise, well, yeah, but they don't do that for me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're kind of missing the point. If you do that for them and do it frequently without being the only one who's giving, you know, but do it frequently when you are the only one who's giving, what you're going to find is you're going to find gratitude. You're going to find them trying to do things for you. The best thing you can do for yourself, frankly, is to be selfless.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I basically think that's true in life general, but generally that's because, you know, to be perfectly frank, if you go through life as a selfish person, other people aren't going to want to give to you and to be with you and to share with you. And you're going to end up being very lonely whether you're in a relationship or not, because people will only put up with that so long. And the only kind of relationship you may have with another person is mutually using arrangements, which are really degrading to everybody concerned, don't give you any kind of
real satisfaction.
No, there's nothing that's life-giving about that kind of situation. It tends to be life-draining. And when you care about someone, you have an open heart. You're naturally giving. Good things flow from you to that other person and from that other person to you. It becomes a circle of loving, giving, caring, openness. And you don't really think about looking stupid or sounding stupid.
Mm-hmm.
You think about you're just going to be you. You're going to give that other person and yourself the gift of being who you truly are and without a lot of masquerade, so that what is there is real. And you know what that means? That sometimes your warts will show, your emotional scars will show.
Uh-huh.
And that's, frankly, what real loving, beautiful closeness is. And that's also what makes people radiant and beautiful to one another, that they can be truly human with each other.
And vulnerable, as you were saying. You know, you don't have to put up a guard.
Yeah, it is vulnerability. And there is... Well, there's one thing that is central to the evolvement of love. It is trust.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be worthy of trust, and you have to be able
trusting.
To trust. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
That's right.
And that means being very open.
Mm-hmm.
And it, even about the things you don't like about yourself, because they're part of who you are. And we're not here because we're perfect. And we're probably less vulnerable. I mean, excuse me, we're probably less appealing if we were perfect. We would be machine-like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the different positive and negative characteristics we have are what make us unique, what make us interesting, what make us creative, and what make us human. And if there's anything that's human, it's a capacity for love. So.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, while you were talking, I was thinking about, well, first off, let me give out the phone number again in case anyone wishes to join us, 347-994-3796. But don't feel compelled to call or join us. Frankly, we're having a good enough time that, you know, we don't need a guest, but, you know, that is a guest caller. But if you want to join us, you're certainly welcome to you know, jump in. The thing I was going to say is that if someone wants to see... perhaps a trivial example of what happens when two people love each other and are trying to give to it, not trying to give each other, it tends to happen naturally, if not at first and after a period of time. Want to see what that's like? They ought to listen to us talk about where we want to eat dinner on the following Saturday evening. Because what ends up happening, and I'm sure you know people like this, the more normal thing is like the scene in the movie Marty. I don't know, what do you want to do? I don't know, what do you want to do? But no, here it's a little bit different. It's, you know, where do you want to eat? Wherever you'd like is fine. Yeah, I understand, thank you, but where would you like to eat? It doesn't really matter. Where do you want to eat? I don't know, what would you like? And they go, you know, we are solicitous of each other's desires. There's, again, another joke there, but the fact is that her importance is more important to me than mine. Mine is more important to her than hers. It's a small thing where you eat dinner. Who cares, really? But the fact that each of us wants to give to the other and have the other be happy is what that's about, what relationships, if they're good, are all about. But the important thing here is that even, and this is what I was saying before, is even if you don't have a deep love connection with your significant other, and I want to talk about that in a minute too, but at least you can be giving to each other and create a much more pleasant relationship. And maybe that will help create that deep love, deep heart connection that you're lacking in your life. Before I come back to you, I just want to say that in terms of people who stay with bad relationships, I have a friend, you know him too, who was in a really bad relationship. And one of the things I told him is that, you know, that before I met you, I was in a bad relationship. I don't mean him, I'm talking about you. Before I had met you, I was in a bad relationship, and I figured that I was condemned to that. I would never find a good one. But as soon as I had decided to leave that relationship, you and I met. Because I had freed myself emotionally, not entirely, but I had freed myself emotionally from being locked into that relationship. And by getting away from that relationship, I opened myself up to the possibility, even without being conscious of it, and then you came into my life. And sure enough, he, when he got out of that other relationship, he met the woman who became his wife, and they have since parented a daughter. And they're very happy together. Mm-hmm. So I guess what I'm saying is, if you're in a really bad relationship, improving it is not an option. Get the heck out of Dodge. Go ahead with what you were going to say before, though.
I also think that you kind of have to be a little bit Buddhist about finding a relationship.
Ah, yes.
And that is, you can't make it the center of your life. You kind of have to say, and really mean it, I kind of surrender this to the universe. I'm going to live my life in the most satisfying, positive way I can. And I'm going to kind of just let go of whether I find the person of either I'm meant to be with or not. And really mean it when you say you're surrendering it. Don't just think the words or say them and then think, well, gee, I wonder if that guy I'm going to be seeing tonight is the one. If you don't want to fall back into that, you really have to let go of it. And one of the things, I don't know why this works completely. I have some guesses. But I tend to think that there is something about the universe and the way it works that we tend to draw to us what we're putting out to some extent. And when we're really focused on finding a significant other that's right for us, there's a little bit of stress that's always going on with us, a little anxiety about what do I do with my life if I don't find that person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that anxiety, that stress, can kind of be off-putting, and I don't think that people pick up on it consciously, but in an unconscious way, we have ways of picking up all kinds of things about people that we're not consciously aware of. And if somebody is kind of stressed out about their lives and themselves, they're frankly not as welcoming, not as warm, not as approachable, not as desirable as if they feel some level of satisfaction in where they are now, that has that translates to people in a very different way. And frankly, there is no shortcut to this. This really does require some psychological work to get there, and you have to be willing to do it.
Yeah, I have often found, and you and I have discussed this, that my own view is that life, the universe, call it what you will, has a way of demonstrating irony. And as an example of that, I try not to play out, so many of us do this, we end up playing out scenarios in our head of what's going to happen the following day or the following evening in terms of some contact we believe we're going to have with somebody, whether it's at work or on a date or whatever. You think you're going to have a particular contact with a particular person, and you kind of play out one or more conversations that you're likely to have. I don't do that because the one thing I know won't happen is the conversation I play out in my head. Likewise, taking it back to the business end, when I am going to show a mobile home that I'm trying to rent out, if I take an application with me, it almost never fails that there's a lack of interest. If I don't, they want it. Okay, in the same way, this gets back, obviously, to what you were saying, which is if you are trying for a relationship or you're striving for them, I'm not saying people shouldn't make efforts at what they want, but in terms, I guess what you were saying is really is don't be obsessive about it. But
well,
if you are really focusing on that, it ain't going to happen. Go ahead.
Before I met you, and I've related this to you before, I'd had this disastrous marriage, and then I'd had some really bad shorter-term relationships, and I decided that this relationship thing simply was not working for me.
Right.
And I went to a place that was very dear to me, and that was I walked along the beach close to where my grandparents used to live, and my grandmother particularly was like, other than you, the light of my life. I just loved her beyond all reason. And, of course, that was return. And they were no longer living. And I walked by that spot, and I just felt that warmth and that support because of the love I had known from them. And while I was walking where I could see the ocean, I said, you know, universe, God, whatever it is I'm supposed to call you, I'm letting go of the relationship thing. I'm going to live out my life the best that I can, and I'm not thinking about it anymore. I'm not going to try to find the person. I'm just completely letting go of it. And I meant this from my gut. I couldn't take the whole relationship thing anymore.
Right, and it was right, it was right about then that I swam ashore, right?
within a few months. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I didn't really swim ashore. We met, right?
That's right. We met. Yes, we did. And it was just, you know, I just kind of cleared the space around me of whatever I was putting out into the universe, rather than pulling the right person to me, was acting like a force field to push the person, you, away. And it's really kind of declaring yourself as a singular human being, and that you know you're complete, and that you no matter how much you wish something would be in your life, it's not working to try and find it, and you just let go of the trying. Doesn't mean that you wouldn't still like it, love it, find, wish that it would be there, but you're not going to try to have it anymore because it's not working for you.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of people would be wise to do something like that.
And for a very good reason. The reason that you said you were stating, which is and that I did too, is that the more you try, the less likely it is to happen for a variety of reasons. Some may be karmic or cosmic. The other one is more practical, which is I'm not suggesting karmic and cosmic aren't practical necessarily, but if you are desperately trying something, the people you're trying it with, the people you're trying to interest in yourself, are going to smell what amounts to desperation or eagerness at a lower level, and that's not appealing.
No, it's not. And you know, you and I, and once again, we're not mentioning names, an older woman, or knew an older woman, she's no longer someone who's really in our lives,
right,
who kept on jumping into relationships with people,
right,
that she basically hardly knew.
Right.
That not really spending time to find out what they were really about or who she was with them.
Uh-huh.
And
right,
she was now in her 60s, and it's been
right,
one disastrous relationship after another. And I mean disastrous to the point where one of her husbands molested her teenage daughter.
Yeah.
That kind of disastrous.
That's
just
pretty disastrous,
so, yeah.
Yeah,
that's about almost as bad as it can get.
Yeah.
Just so consistently desperate that she could know somebody for 2 weeks. I think the last partner she was with, she knew like on two dates, and he asked her to move across the country and move in with him, and she went.
Yeah.
And, you know, knowing absolutely nothing about him.
Yeah, but she learned.
But she
that was it was a really bad relationship.
Well, she learned about that one, but I don't think she really has learned about what it takes to be a singular, fulfilled person within
yeah,
yourself, so that you can find the other, the person
right,
that you are. And I do believe that for most of us, there is another out there. It's just that I think many, many people, rather than having the patience and the will to wait for that perfectly right person, do, perhaps not in as dramatic a way as the example I just gave, do
right,
leap into relationships, and then maybe, you know, 10 years of their lives are gone or more, and then they're back where they started, except all that they're older now.
Yeah,
and
excuse me 1 second, sweetie. I just want to point out we've got about 3 minutes left. See, just like being married, it all goes by so quickly. we've got 3 minutes left. We will be back next week at the same time. We'll continue talking for a few more minutes. But next week we will be having Larry Hancock with us to talk again about his book, Someone Would Have Talked, about the Kennedy assassination. And if we end up fading out before we get a chance to say goodbye, I want to thank all of you who are listening tonight or listening to the show, whether live on the 18th or in archive form, and want to invite you back. We've had a really significant jump in listenership, and I want to thank you all for listening and staying. And again, please join us next week, same time. Anyway, go ahead with what you were saying.
I guess what I'm saying is wait it out. Don't enjoy dating. Don't take it real seriously. If it should be taken seriously, you'll know it. Enjoy it. It's kind of an adventure to get to know another person. Don't be desperate. Do whatever it is you need to do in your life to find life fulfilling on your own, and have a lot to give and a lot to receive, and don't get into a relationship like you and I initially did.
Right, with other people.
Because obviously you and I really both knew before we did what we did in our previous marriages that we were going in with the wrong person.
Right.
And we just, out of desperation at that point in our lives, we made the wrong decision because we did not feel we could wait to find the truly right person. And
yeah, well, in my case, I didn't know that there was a truly right person out there. So, you know, that was the situation. You were in a different situation, of course, which we needn't, you know, we can't spend any time with because we're almost out of it. But the fact is that a lot of people don't believe that there's someone there for them, because they really don't think they themselves are worthy of a really good relationship. So let me just tell everybody who's listening, in our remaining 60 seconds, you really are worthy of it. You deserve it. So save yourself for it. As Alicia was saying, go ahead, date, enjoy social events, but don't get hooked into a relationship that could be a disaster, because whatever happens in that in a relationship, it really is going to be with you on some level the rest of your life. With that, if you don't mind, baby, I'm going to cut you off, and me. All right?
Okay.
All right, sorry.
See you soon.
Yeah, okay. And we're here at the Sumptuous Bushman Studios, and we'll see each other there in a minute. So I'm going to click her off, and in a moment I'm going to click myself off. Thank you all for joining us. We'll see you next week at blogtalkradio.com/Jeff-Bushman. Good night.